Oh, hi, Burton. This is Arnold Levine with KOWS Radio in Sonoma County, California.
Nice to be here.
Well, thank you very much for coming on. And you're with the U.S. Census Bureau, and you're the Chief Decennial Communications and Stakeholder Relations Officer. Is that correct?
Just that. Just Chief of Decennial Communications and Stakeholder Relations. I manage all communications coming out of, well, all communications around the program, the Decennial Census, the 2020 Census, and the American Community Survey. I also work very closely with congressional relations, with the Department of Commerce, with the Office of Management Budget. I manage intergovernmental communications as well, primarily on the 2020 Census.
Now, that's pretty broad.
It is.
That's a lot of hats to wear.
Yes, it is.
Well, thank you. Thanks for taking the time. And I thought it would be good to give our local area just an update what's happening, because the census is coming up in pretty short time, I'm sure, in your schedule.
That's right.
It's agonizingly short now.
We're less than 2 years away. And in fact, operations get underway in just over a year. August of 2019.
So, yeah, that's one of the my questions is, it basically keeps running through 2020. When does the information stop being gathered?
We start the census by developing our address list, and we've been working on our address list. That's how we determine where to count. We build an address list of every housing unit in the United States. And we go on the ground in areas where we need to check that address list in August of 2019. We will then continue to refine and develop the address list, and we'll start our full-bore partnership and communications campaign to educate the public about the importance of the census beginning in the fall of 2019. In early 2020, we will start the census actually in remote Alaska. We start the census in Alaska because that's the only way we can reach the people who live up there is in the wintertime when the tundra is frozen and we can get them in their villages. So we start the census in January. But for most of the public, the census begins with our mail out of information about the census and how to respond to the census in early March. And then we'll spend March and most of April encouraging people to get on the internet and respond to the census or return a paper questionnaire or call us and give us their census information. That's the three ways you can answer the census, is with a paper questionnaire or via the internet or by calling our telephone questionnaire assistance centers to give us your data about the questions that we ask on the form. It's just a few questions, and it's done to determine the population of the count of the United States for the purposes of apportioning members of Congress as per the Constitution. Article 1, Section 2 of the Constitution directs us to conduct a census for the purpose of apportioning members of Congress. So we will do the mail out and encourage people to respond, and we'll be in on the airwaves. We'll have a robust advertising and promotion campaign. Our census partners, hundreds of thousands of census partners, will be out helping their constituents, their communities respond to the census. And then starting in late April, early May, we'll go out and, for the most part, knock on the doors of the people who have not responded to the census and collect their information with an interview so that we wind up getting a count of everybody living in the United States.
So the knocking on the doors is literally the last gasp thing you do.
It's the last major phase of the census, right? We do that after we've done everything we can to get people to respond to us. It's much better for people to respond about their household, because we know that we get better information about better data about their household that way, and it's much cheaper for us if they respond. Sending people out to knock on doors is the most expensive part of conducting the census each year, each decade.
What is that percentage that you have to literally knock on the door?
Well, we're estimating a response rate of about 60%, 60.5% of the population will respond, and the remaining 39 to 40%, we expect we'll have to go and knock on doors for those households.
Well, I'm quite amazed it's that high. Huh.
Yeah.
That puts quite a burden on you, doesn't it?
It does. It's a lot of people that don't respond, and we always hope that people will respond to the census. But we know that In recent decades, the response rates have been dropping in censuses and surveys across Western democracies. And we've done a lot to stem the decline, but that's it's kind of where we're stabilizing in 60, low 60% range.
Now, how are you funded?
We get an appropriation from the Congress. We have prepared a life cycle cost estimate that the Secretary has testified to. He did his own assessment of our life cycle cost estimate and went before the Congress last fall to testify on behalf of the census and discuss what it will take to ensure that we get a good census. And we have a very strong life cycle cost estimate, thanks in part to the Secretary's hard work. And we are in very good shape with respect to our budget. We have a strong, robust budget. It includes contingency funding, and we have the funding we need to conduct a strong and successful census.
Let's just go back a couple of hundred years. What is the brief history? When was it promulgated? What instigated it? And so, why every 10 years?
The history of this is that our founders took the census, which is something that traditionally up to that point had been used to oppress people, to tax people. They took it and turned it upside down and made it the foundation of our democracy. The census is as I said, it's called for in the Constitution. Article 1, Section 2 of the Constitution calls for a census of the population to be done to apportion members of Congress, the House of Representatives, among the states. And the census isn't used just for that, but that's the constitutional purpose of the census. And that was done in when the articles of the Constitution were solidified, and the first census was conducted in 1790, and we've done it every 10 years since, by law. I think, in fact, the Constitution does say that it should be done every 10 years, that we would do a census every 10 years, and it's to ensure that we have an accurate representation within the House of Representatives for the states that reflects our population.
So it's just totally linked in with that.
Right, yeah. Right. And then census data are used for other purposes as well. They're used to draw legislative districts within the states, and they're used for the dissemination of federal funds. Over $675 billion a year are distributed using census data. And so responding to the census is important not just for political representation, but to ensure that everyone's community gets their fair share of federal funding for schools, for fire departments, for roads, for water systems, for all kinds of infrastructure and other federally funded important things for communities are driven by census data, and an accurate census is critical for that.
Well, and that obviously that all comes down to getting an accurate count, and
right.
Just recently there's been recent press about, seems like there's been some subtle changes about how and who are counted, and there's been some confusion obviously about undocumented and
so in the census, like, yeah, in the census,
green cards,
right. I understand the concerns people have, but I want to stress that we count everyone in the census, everyone living in the country, whether they're citizens or not. We will in this census, the secretary has determined that we will ask a question about citizenship on the form, but that doesn't change the importance of answering the census and the use of the data. We will still count all residents, and all residents will be used in the determinations of census data for all census purposes. I should also mention that we go to great lengths to ensure that the data that we collect are used for only statistical purposes. We don't use them for any other purposes, and we don't share them with any other agencies. So answering the census is safe, the data are protected, and that's written into the regulations that govern all of us as census employees. We swear an oath to ensure that we protect the data and we use the data only for the purposes that we state, the statistical purposes of producing data about our country, about our population, about our economy.
Right, but you're talking about the grassroots, like house-by-house data that's protected. The overall statistical data is used.
That's correct. It's aggregated statistical data that we use for many, many purposes, and it's entirely publicly available.
Right. Yeah, that's it. So anybody, any business or individual can access it, any previous census then, and use it. Yeah, just use it.
That's right. That's right. And businesses use it for making determinations about how to build their businesses, how to locate franchises, how to stock the shelves. They use it to make decisions about the way they're developing their business. I think communities make decisions about how they're developing their communities. Census data are used in many, many ways to inform our public and inform our businesses and government.
Wow, I wish a lot of people realize that importance that it holds.
It is. It's very important.
So it echoes through the whole country.
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, that is a concern. Security hackers, other government agencies have been hacked. How much do you spend, or how many people do you have on just that?
We have an entire directorate focused on IT security, our information technology directorate. We're looking closely, working hard to ensure that the layers of security, the layers of protection of our data, all of our data, are strong and sound. We work with other federal agencies. We work with agencies within the Department of Commerce, as well as agencies like the Department of Homeland Security, to continually develop and continually evolve our cybersecurity procedures and processes to make sure that the data are protected and the data are safe. So we understand the concerns, and this is a concern of ours too, and we take it very seriously.
Between censuses, do you kind of estimate things, like try and keep things going?
Absolutely.
Or is it just a stop and start
thing? No, so we do the decennial census every 10 years, the year ending in zero, where we count the entire population. And we ask just basic questions about age, race, Hispanic origin, relationship, whether or not someone's an owner or a renter, the gender of the people living in the household. We ask those questions and citizenship every 10 years. And then we conduct what we call the American Community Survey on a rolling basis throughout the decade. And that's capturing data on a vast array of economic and social and demographic characteristics of every household in the country. We do that on a statistical sample, and it's done, again, on a rolling basis. And each year we produce data on the population using the American Community Survey data. There are also a whole series of censuses and surveys that we do at the Census Bureau during what we call the intercensal years, the years between the decennial census. And that includes the economic census that's going on right now that we do every 5 years, and that's the census of businesses that's used to drive business indicators and economic indicators. That's very important as well. So it's not like the work stops once we're done with a 10-year count. It's the biggest operation we do. It's the largest mobilization of peacetime mobilization of the American population to get the census done every 10 years. And that count serves as the benchmark driving forward throughout the decade, but we're constantly updating the data and collecting the broader data on the population that I described. We also do population estimates every year to address the population count using the American Community Survey as well as other ways of looking at the population. But it all comes back every 10 years to the decennial census, where we do the census of the entire population of the country and reach everybody for the purposes of the decennial census.
I imagine that comes into account. Obviously, in Sonoma County here, we had the awful situation last year of having 6,000 homes burnt to the ground, and those homes and those people won't be back in those homes by the time of the census. What happens to all those homes not being counted and the people dispersed?
We will count everybody where they're living and sleeping most of the time on Census Day. That's April 1st of the year ending in 10. It'll be zero. And in this case, the April 1st, 2020. We do some things to ensure that we have an accurate picture of the communities, and especially communities that are hit by natural disasters. This is true for areas like where you live. I'm from California, so I was very sensitive to the forest fires that happened last year. You know, areas hit by hurricanes or flooding, areas in Texas or the state of the Commonwealth of Puerto Rico. You know, we are very sensitive to the fact that things change dramatically when there's a natural disaster. So we'll change our operations to put people on the ground checking where people are living and updating our address list to make sure that we are walking the streets and understanding in those areas, particularly that have been hit by natural disasters, to understand, how people have changed. You know, it might be that, for example, somebody's living in a trailer a block away from where their house used to be and where their house might exist on our address list. So we'll account for that to make sure if there's folks living in that trailer, we get them in the census. It's an operation we call Update Leave, where we are actually on the ground updating the address list and leaving a mail package so that people can respond to the census so that we adjust for the mass. We do this in rural America anyway, very rural areas, but it's an operation we put in place in areas that have undergone the kind of you know, tough situation that you just described in Sonoma County. I'm very sensitive to that.
Yeah, we are very sensitive to that.
But it's true for, like I said, it's true for Texas, Corpus Christi area, and the Gulf Coast. It's true for certainly Puerto Rico as well, you know, and we'll have to make adjustments based on what happens this year and, in fact, next year, too. We'll be watching that.
Yeah, because by 2020, I'd say only 10% of the homes will be rebuilt.
Well, and then, you know, the other thing, too, is we are constantly updating our data. Like I said, using the American Community Survey, it goes to 3.5 million people a year, and it's one other way that we make accommodations for the fact that communities are changing every year. They don't just change every 10 years. So the American Community Survey gives us a way of making adjustments to the data so that as people move back to Sonoma County, we're able to account for them.
Right, exactly, because you ought to double count people, you need to not count them at all.
That's right.
That's the problem. Now, what languages will the information be available in?
We're conducting the most robust language support operation that we've ever conducted before, and we'll be allowing people to respond to the census via the internet or over the telephone in 12 languages, Spanish and English for sure, and I've got a piece of paper here that lists them, Spanish, Chinese, both in Mandarin and Cantonese, Vietnamese, Korean, Russian, Arabic, Tagalog, Polish, French, Haitian Creole, Portuguese, and Japanese. That's 12 languages that we'll have people ready to answer on the telephone. We'll be advertising in those languages so that people will see that they can answer via the telephone. They can go online and get just click a button to get a questionnaire in their language and respond to it. We'll also provide support materials in 59 languages. I won't list those for you. But, you know, that one of the most amazing things about this country is the diversity of our country. And we take great measures to make sure that we support people and make it as easy as possible for them to respond to the census.
Another thing, obviously a big thing in people's minds, are jobs. I know, obviously, there's a lot of jobs in the 2020 census. So what is available, when, for how long, and what education do you need, the training, the pay?
So the pay scales are competitive. I think we'll be paying, right now, we will adjust our pay scales as we get closer to the census, but it's in the neighborhood of $18 an hour. This is term work, temporary work. We'll be hiring about 40,000 people to go on the ground in our address listing operation in what we call in-field address canvassing. That'll be in August. You know, we'll be recruiting that for that operation, which begins in August of 2019. And then we'll start recruiting in the fall of 2019 for the non-response follow-up operation, where we have about, you know, as many as 500,000 people fanning out across the country, knocking on the doors of the people who haven't responded to the census. Those ads, there'll be ads in, you know, in posters and social media, radio ads. I'm sure you'll have radio ads running, print ads. Our census partners will do outreach for us to ensure that people know how to how to apply for jobs. We do an assessment online in their online application process. They can also come to 2020census.gov anytime and find out how to apply for a job. And so, you know, we'll do everything we can to hire the workforce we need, and we'll be successful in doing that. The economy is pretty good. The unemployment rate's fairly low, or very low. So we will be able, you know, that's a challenge for us, but we're confident that we'll get the workforce that we need. And those jobs will be available for, you know, several weeks in the spring, in the late summer, early fall of 2019, and then 8 to 10 weeks, or depending, 6 to 10 weeks in the spring, early summer of 2020 in the non-response follow-up operation. There will be other jobs as well in our area census offices that exist for a longer period of time. But most of the jobs are the interviewers that are going to be helping us conduct the non-response follow-up operation.
Obviously, people go door to door. I think there's been problems in the past, fake census takers and things like that. So obviously, IDs are going to be important.
They'll all have an ID. It'll be very clear. They're only going to be asking you the questions that I described, the 10 questions on the census questionnaire. They're not going to be asking for financial information. They're not going to be asking for Social Security numbers. We'll do a lot to help educate the people. Yeah, there are people. We have to take measures to do that, but it's pretty clear that the people that are knocking on your door are working for the Census Bureau, and they will have identifications indicating that.
Oh, good. And obviously, the final thing, when does that information come out?
The census information, we produce what we call the apportionment counts. The counts for apportioning the members of Congress among the states are due to the president by law by the 31st of December in 2020. And then shortly after that, over the next few months, we'll produce the redistricting data for the states, the data that states use to draw congressional districts. That'll be available starting in late, depending on state by state. That's all produced by April 1st, 2021. And then additional information will be available both when we release the apportionment counts. There will be additional information about the population available, and more detailed information will come out that following year. But the two big times are December 31st for the apportionment counts and then April 1st of 2021 for the redistricting counts that the states will be using within their states to draw congressional districts and all districts, really, all governmental districts and other kinds of boundaries.
What ramifications that has.
Well, it's very important.
Really is. Well, thank you, Bert Nate Rice, as the Chief of Decennial Communications and Stakeholder Relations. That's quite a job you've got going there.
Well, it's a big job. There are a lot of us doing it. We're a great team. So thanks for having me on. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Oh, I really appreciate you being on, and hopefully this gives a good bit of information for everybody.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.